The Garden Question is a podcast for people that love designing, building, and growing smarter gardens that work. Listen in as we talk with successful garden designers, builders, and growers, discovering their stories along with how they think, work, and grow. This is your next step in creating a beautiful, year-round, environmentally connected, low-maintenance, and healthy, thriving outdoor space. It doesn't matter if you're a beginner or an expert. There will always be something inspiring when you listen to the Garden Question podcast. Hello, I'm your host, Craig McManus. In this episode, we talk with Brent Heath of Brent and Becky's Bulbs. We explore the vibrant world of summer blooming bulbs. He guides us through making the most of our gardens with these colorful gems taking center stage. We cover selecting the right bulb for various garden needs, planting techniques, and soil preparation. Brent shares his wisdom of many growing seasons, discussing the importance of compost, the handling of bulbs, and mulching. He addresses common problems such as moisture management and pest control. His insightful tips on garden planning for continuous blooms from the spring to the fall, leveraging bulb combinations for vibrant color themes, and encouraging biodiversity with pollinator-friendly choices are also provided. Additionally, Brent delves into his family's gardening heritage, their commitment to organic practices, and the joy gardening brings to both the gardener and the community. This is episode 153, Choosing and Growing the Right Summer Bulbs for Your Garden, with Brent Heath on the Garden Question Podcast. Brent, where do we begin a conversation about summer blooming bulbs?
We begin in thinking that now is beginning time for planting some of the summer flowering bulbs. Soil temperatures are beginning to get warm enough. One can plant lilies right now. One can plant liatris, a Native American bulb. People should begin to think about filling in the empty spots in their garden with summer flowering bulbs and perennials. They should think in terms of sequencing their garden so they will have something spring, summer, and then autumn. And the spring flowering bulbs are ones that we typically plant when soil temperatures are 60 degrees or above at 6 inches deep. Now's the time to think about planting them. The bulbs have arrived from Holland. Our greenhouses are filled with the tropical bulbs, which we start from tissue culture plugs. Greenhouses are filled with perennial plugs right now. We will start shipping to southern customers next week sometime. I'm not a part of the daily operation anymore. Jay, Denise, Becky, and Cindy take care of that with a wonderful crew of people.
How do you go about choosing the right summer bulb for your garden?
If you have a time of bloom you're looking for, a color you're looking for, a height, all of this information is given in the catalog with the pictures and descriptions and on the website also. But they also let you know which bulbs and perennials are good for pollinators. There are many that are native to North America. We let you know which ones are perennial to which plant zones. Some of the summer flowering bulbs are tropical and need to be treated as annuals. They are perennial in some places where they're coming from, but we call them temporary perennials, temperennials. Most people treat a lot of those as annuals, but in your warmer climate, zones 7, 8, and 9, many of them are hardy plants.
Can they be dug and saved over the winter if you're not in a hardy area?
They can indeed. As soon as any bulb leaves begin to turn yellow, they're shutting down the photosynthesis, and that's the best time to dig them. So typically for these summer bulbs, depending on where you are in the country, the leaves will begin to turn yellow, and that's the time to dig them. Make certain you do not follow the instructions that tell you to wash them. Soil on the bulb is actually beneficial. The soil that surrounds the bulb has beneficial microorganisms, bacteria, fungi, amoebas, etc. They help protect the bulb. So it's important to dry them well out of the sunlight and then store them in some sort of media, which could be potting soil, it could be peat moss, it could be wood shavings. Some of them want to be stored in something to keep them from drying out. And others, we find it's much easier just to leave them in the pot in which they're grown, because a lot of summer bulbs are used as container plants. I leave them right in the pot. As soon as the frost hits the leaves, cut them off and just store the pot in an area that will not freeze over the winter.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of rain here in my area. Is it possible to be too wet?
Rule of thumb is most of us like to sleep in a dry bed. You ever slept with a baby? You know what it's like to have the bed wet. Bulbs like to sleep in a dry bed when they're dormant. We go dormant at night when we go to sleep. The bulbs go dormant when their leaves die. The summer flowering bulbs, believe it or not, prefer to be on the dry side, most of them, in the winter when they're dormant. So important for them to have good drainage if they're perennial, with the exception of some like the elephant ears, the colocasias. They don't mind wet soil, and they can actually grow in pots in the water. The others, spring flowering bulbs, like plenty of moisture right now, and the summer flowering bulbs, when you plant them, you want to give them adequate moisture probably once a week until they're up and actively growing, and once a week if you don't have adequate rainfall.
If it tends to be wet or we're in a wet period, then maybe we want to plant it in a mound or something like that?
Typically, spring moisture is not a problem for them. When they're actively growing, moisture is not a problem. It's just when they're dormant, that's when they can get stressed and catch a fungus and rot. Often if you lose bulbs, the biggest problem aside from the edible ones is that they've been stressed by too much moisture, not enough air around them.
I hate to admit this, but sometimes I'll order bulbs and for some reason I don't get them planted on time. What happens with the bulb if I don't plant it on time? Is there such thing as being too late to plant it?
There is, but I'm still getting phone calls all week long. People say, I just found some bulbs under the bed. I haven't planted them yet. Can I store them until next year? No. If you go to the grocery store today and you buy potatoes, carrots, onions, there's a limited storage time because they tend to dry out. They desiccate. The sooner you plant them, the better. You cannot leave them out for another season. You could pot them up and grow them in pots if it's not convenient to plant them outside in the soil.
What about mulching? Is there any restrictions I should look out for when I'm planting a summer bulb?
Mulching is nature's way of weed control. You know, the annual weeds that come from seeds, those seeds need light in order to germinate. We love pine needles. I use a lot of pine needles for mulching. We use aged wood chips for mulching. What you want to do is cut down the sunlight from the soil, and also it helps insulate the soil so you don't get big fluctuations of hot and cold. Mulching is great for everything, in my opinion. People ask me about chemical weed control. We don't use it here. We feel like there are too many chemicals in our environment, and our Chesapeake Bay is suffering dramatically from people using too many chemicals. So we find that weed control works well with mulching.
Are there any other common mistakes that people tend to make that we could avoid easily?
You mentioned gladiolas, and that's a fun one. Yeah, gladiolas don't tend to dry out as badly. You can get them, and a lot of people avoid gladiolas because they associate them with funerals. The flowers are very inexpensive, and hence they're used a lot for cut flowers. They're wonderful in the garden because many plants have a mound shape, a ball-like shape, but gladiolas have a spire or a spear-like shape. They give you a little different outlook in your garden. Gladiolas typically all bloom at a similar time, unless you hold them, you plant some 1 week, and you plant some the next week, and the next week, and then that first year, they'll bloom alternately throughout the summer, extending your bloom time. Now, if you plant your gladiolas deep enough, most people don't plant them deep enough. they won't have the tendency to fall over unless you make the big mistake. The big mistake is planting plants whose leaves actually need sunlight in order to recharge for the solar collectors to create energy to recharge the bulbs or the roots. So the biggest mistake people make is planting sun-loving plants in the shade. There are some plants that have bigger leaves and are able to collect more light in part shade. There are a fair number of summer bulbs that are somewhat shade tolerant. The next biggie for people is something's eating my bulbs or something digging my bulbs up, but not eating them. I plant them and they dig them back up again. Typically, that's a squirrel or voles. And some bulbs are edible. Bulbs are starchy storage organs. Fortunately, some have chemicals in them that make them not only distasteful, but mildly poisonous to critters. If your bulbs are being dug up often, you've read a book in the past that advocates using bone meal as a fertilizer. Bone meal is a byproduct of the butcher industry, and they try to figure out what to do with them. They grind them up. They sell them as a fertilizer. It has a lot of calcium in it, and it has a fair amount of phosphorus in it, but it does not have all the other elements that bulbs really need. The negative is when people use bone meal and they put it under their plants or bulbs, typically any carnivore, a raccoon, a skunk, a possum, a dog, a fox, or a coyote will come along, smell the bones, and dig up the bulbs also. Do not use bone meal. Instead, feed your soil with a good compost. Yard waste leaf compost is the best thing you can do. Feed the biome, all the bacteria and the fungi in that soil with organic matter in compost. Everything will grow well. We use no chemicals at all here in our gardens. We use just compost. We do brew compost tea, and we add some fish emulsion to that, which is from kelp. And that supplies some minerals and things that help plants become very vigorous and strong. We do use some volcanic minerals called A to Z minerals, azomite, and a lot of trace minerals will enhance color of your flowers, etc. Do not put fertilizer in the hole with plants. You can burn the tender roots as they begin to emerge. Often people say, did you put fertilizer in the hole? They said, oh, the garden center or the garden book or the fertilizer bag says, put a handful in the bottom of the hole. That is a mistake. The chemical fertilizers can burn plants' roots. So they're the biggies that I think of.
Using compost is going to maximize the blooming period in the summer bulbs, or is that pretty much genetically?
Compost also improves the porosity of the soil. It also improves the moisture-holding ability of the soil. So your soil doesn't dry out as quickly. Often the length of bloom has to do if you get a dry spell. They dry out, they go over quickly because they dry out. Genetically, some plants last longer in bloom than others. We have a phlox in our catalog this year that we've had for a number of years now called Phlox Gina. And it just blooms throughout most of the summer, where most phlox come and bloom for a month maybe. This one blooms for 2 or 3 months. Now, deadheading, taking the old flowers off, will enhance the bloom time. You'll get new blooms on many of the summer flowering bulbs. Not all of them, but many of them will rebloom if you take the old flowers off. Reason being, the pollinators have come and spread the pollen, and if they start setting seeds, the plant thinks it's done its job for the season, so it doesn't produce any more blooms. If you take the old blooms off, it feels like it needs to bloom again, produce more seeds. Cut and come again is a good thing. Dahlias in particular need to take the old flowers off. They rebloom, particularly in the fall.
Would you pick some summer blooming bulbs and pair them up?
Absolutely. We do some fun things. We do a container workshop called Living Flower Arrangements. What we do is we do 5 layers of bulbs in a pot at different heights. They have a color theme. And Becky's garden, it has 20 some garden rooms. It has color themed garden rooms. She says there's a red, white, and blue garden. She calls it a patriotic garden. There's a pink, white, and purple garden. So cool colors. There's a yellow, red, and orange garden. Warm colors. There is an all-white garden. Cool colors, but white also shows up at night. Now, the next thing you want to make sure if you're making combinations is, if you want to bloom at the same time or a similar time, look for the bloom times. We put the bloom times. We start with early summer, early midsummer, late and very late. You match those bloom times up and you'll get nice combinations. Also think in terms of heights. Have something big in the back like a lily. Most lilies grow anywhere from 3 to 6 feet tall. We have a nice cluster of lilies in the back with, for instance, one that I like is Forever Susan. It's orange and black. It's wonderful. And you can marry that to a day lily called VT Spirit, which is a little bit shorter. Then look for some other things. I would use a dark leaf colocasia, elephant ear with it. That would make a nice combination. The elephant ear is there all summer. You've got a lot of these bulbs that have beautiful leaves. That's something we often forget. We look for flowers. Flowers are the icing on the cake. The leaves are there all summer, so they're the cake. The elephant ear, the colocasia, there's some wonderful dark leafed ones of those. I would even go with a orange gladiola with them, another spiky one where you have a little mound. And then I'd use probably some of the little plant called oxalis. It's a little bulb native to North America that has wonderful little yellow flowers. Oxalis means zephyrinthe. It's the rain lily. And there's one called citrina. So that's very short. You'd use that in front. I like to think of the things in front as the shoes and socks. You start with something short and get a little taller and a little taller. You can do this in containers, but you can also do it throughout your garden. Daughter-in-law Denise, Jay's wife, who is now the composer of the catalog, she puts together some combination gardens that are right in the front of the catalog. Got one for shade, which has oxalis, fern, lily of the valley, and dicentra, the bleeding heart. She's got a butterfly garden, all ones that butterflies particularly like. She has contrasting colors to get attention. And hummingbird ones that hummingbirds particularly like, and ones that work well in pots. And she has a garden that's all pretty and pink. A lot of ideas there for fun combinations.
How about timing the bloom cycle with annuals or perennials?
They're both bulbs and perennials in the catalog. We do give the bloom times. I gave you the early spring, mid-spring, late mid-spring, etc. You match the perennial to the bulb and they should bloom at a similar time. Most annuals bloom most of the summer. They've been bred to bloom most of the summer. Now, I use annuals and I don't buy bedding plants, but I buy seeds. I often overseed with annuals. When I disturb the soil, you disturb the soil that allows it to get sunlight and weeds tend to germinate. When I plant something new, I often will scratch in some annual seeds to bloom with that grouping of plants I've planted. I also use vegetable seeds in my garden. There are some beautifully colored leaves on lettuces and kale. I even use okra in the back of my garden. There's some beautiful red-potted, red-stemmed okra. You can have a lot of fun gardening. The young woman in North Carolina has developed a term called foodscaping, and it's actually a book in the back of our catalog. How to mix food plants into your flower garden. Flower garden typically feeds the soul. The vegetable garden feeds the tummy. Meant to be fun. I mix all kinds of things in bed together. Becky has her gardens pretty themed. Some people enjoy the tours of my orgy garden, and others really enjoy Becky's themed garden. It all depends on your tastes and what you like.
What are some of your favorite annuals you like to plant from seed?
I do larkspur, actually a biennial, and I seed that in the fall. I like sweet William, Dianthus barbatus. I like Viola cornuta, little Johnny jump ups. The easier ones I plant in the fall when I plant spring flowering bulbs. In the summer, I use more vegetables in my gardens than vegetable seeds.
Are there any bulbs that are fragrant that we need to know about?
No, absolutely are. The amazing lilies. The Asiatics are not, but the rest of all the lilies, the Oriental trumpets, some of the species, they all have a marvelous fragrance and can be enjoyed. And the evening fragrance is a volatile compound that when it gets warm, it volatilizes and spreads. So often it doesn't get blown away so much in the evening. Evening fragrance is pretty wonderful. The polyanthes, the tuberoses, native to Mexico, amazing fragrance. They're an heirloom plant that have been around for many years. My landscape business used to do some retirement home gardens. That was the most sought after plant. People would go out and recognize that fragrance. They may be losing their memories, but they would remember those tuberoses. Agastache. Agastache is a mint, but it's not a running mint. It's not promiscuous. It doesn't get in every bed like many mints do. They're stoloniferous. Agastache is the fragrance of licorice when you rub the foliage, which is wonderful. It's one of the most popular pollinator plants. Everything loves to use agastache. They are native to parts of North America. They're pretty wonderful. Lily of the Valley, Convallaria, a wonderful shade-tolerant, critter-proof perennial. It has the most heavenly, sweet, perfume-like fragrance. It's wonderful carpeting ground cover plant. The crinums. Crinums are old-fashioned amaryllis that are hardy. They have a wonderfully sweet fragrance. Absolutely critter-proof. Nothing bothers a crinum. Nobody eats it. All the amaryllis plant family members are critter-proof. None of the dahlias have a particular fragrance, sadly, but the dianthus, a perennial, have a clove-like fragrance, which is pretty wonderful. Moving right along. The Euchomus, the pineapple lily from South Africa, has a lovely fragrance. You asked about long-lasting flowers. They last all summer long. It's a wonderful spike of flowers that go anywhere from a foot to 3 feet tall. The pollinators adore them. They're even fun to grow in containers. None of the gladiolas that I remember are particularly fragrant. There's a ginger lily called Hedychium. Marvelous sweet fragrance. Later bloomers in the summer garden, they're tall. They typically go 3 to 6 feet, but wonderful spikes of fragrant flowers in the fall. The foliage, when crushed, smells a little bit like ginger. Sweet smelling flowers. The Hymenocallis, they sometimes call them spider lilies. Some are native to this country. It's another amaryllis. Nothing eats it. They have a wonderful lemony sweet fragrance. The bearded irises have a marvelous fragrance. They're probably amongst the very best. Probably the most fragrant of all the summer flowering bulbs. Lavender. Everybody loved lavender. The lavender likes to grow hot and dry. We can supply that if we grow them on berms here. Elevate them, grow in pots, and they have nectar for pollinators all summer long. Monarda, bee balm, Oswego tea, Native American plant. The hybrids of it are wonderful. They're a bit promiscuous. They're stoloniferous. You plant one and it moves and gets in the bed next to it. They're lovely, really long lasting in bloom. Pollinators adore them. And the leaves of some of them are used to flavor a tea. If you ever have Earl Grey English breakfast tea, it's flavored with the leaves of Monarda. So wonderful fragrance there. Phlox have incredible, lovely fragrance that all the pollinators adore. The tuberoses we talked about already. They're getting color in the tuberoses now, which is nice. Heretofore, they were just white, but now they're pink and yellow. The salvia is also a kind of mint. They bloom all summer. They have lovely fragrance. Their flowers as well. Some spectacular flowers that last all summer are the Xantadecias. Xantadecias are calla lilies native to South Africa. Do you know 10% of the world's plants are native to South Africa? And many of them are bulbs. The gladiolars are native to South Africa. That we bred them, but the zantidaceous have wonderful flowers that last almost all summer long in very bright colors. They're large, they're fleur-de-lis kind of flowers, great for picking and flower arranging. Almost all the bulbs in here are great for cutting also.
Yeah, great list.
There will be a search engine on the website that people will be able to put in fragrance, and that will pull things down a list.
Is there a bulb that has a fragrance that we want to stay away from or plant it away from the house?
None of the ones that I've listed here. Some of the aroids, which we are familiar with, the native Aracema, Triphyllum, the Jack in the Pulpit, that puts off a sort of putrid fragrance that attracts different sorts of pollinators. There are a few aroids that we do sell in the fall. We don't sell any currently in this list, but they smell like rotting meat. They attract flies and carrion beetles. You don't want to plant them right by your back door. But they have dramatic big flowers, and they're spectacular different.
Are you seeing any innovations on how gardeners are using summer blooming bulbs?
All the time. If you follow Longwood Gardens and what they do in the conservatories, they're using what most people refer to as amaryllis, which are actually hippiastrums, the proper name. They're in the amaryllis plant family. You force them at Christmas time, but they're wonderful garden plants. They're using them in lots of their indoor arrangements. We use them here in the garden as hardy garden plants. You can in Atlanta as well. There are some lovely smaller flowered ones that I think fit a little better in a gardening situation.
Brent, would you talk a bit about the giant tropicals?
That feeling of being on some paradise island with giant bananas and elephant ears and gingers. These are all being produced in the greenhouse right now in a compost media. We fertigate them with compost tea. We do insect control with things like a horticultural oil, or we use parasitic nematodes, which actually go after the fungus gnats that are sometimes a greenhouse problem. Our greenhouses are actually chemical-free. But these giant tropicals are so dramatic, so big. The elephant ears, I already mentioned, the colocasias. You start them in a pot of compost, put some pebbles around the top of the pot, and then you can submerge this in your water garden. They're very happy growing in a pot in the water. They're big and dramatic. You want to catch somebody's attention. Some of these elephant ears have dramatic colors now. They're not just green anymore. They're gold, they're yellow. They have white and red in them. They're variegated. They're absolutely jet black. Some of them have stripes in the leaves. Amazing plants. We do sell quite a few of them. Some are even hardy in zones 8 and certainly in 9 and 10. Here in Becky's garden, she's got a spot. Becky gardens in heavy gray mottled clay. I garden in sandy loam a mile away. Her garden, she puts about 6 inches to a foot of compost on top of the clay before she plants and finds great success with that. A yard waste compost is dirt cheap. Most municipalities pick up your bags of leaves and they turn them into compost. Call your municipal public works department and find out where you can get the yard waste compost, because that's the best thing you can do in your garden. But anyhow, she has in her garden a lot of the bananas and elephant ears and things growing quite well. In my sandy loam, some of the bananas come back, the Musa Baju does, and most of the elephant ears, they do only down by my pond. They grow all around my pond, and they come back there quite well.
For those that are not familiar, would you tell us about Brent and Becky's Bulbs?
Brent and Becky's Bulbs is a family business. My grandfather started growing daffodils in 1900. He began to find the kinds of daffodils that were great for picking the flowers and shipping to market, began to sell them to local farmers. At one point, there were about 500 families growing daffodils in Gloucester and Matthews counties. for picking the flowers for the Easter market. My father took on the business. He married well. He married my mother. She didn't have a lot of money, but she had brains, and he realized he didn't need to be in charge. They had a mail order business that at one point in time had 1,500 varieties of daffodils in their catalog. I bought the business from my mother in 1972. I married well. I married Becky, a school teacher who was at the time teaching one of my children. We'd each had a starter marriage, and didn't take me long to realize I didn't need to be in charge. As the business has progressed, she enabled me to go around the country lecturing. Been to every state except North Dakota and Hawaii to lecture. I now come to Jay's office, which is a lot easier than getting on an airplane. Fortunately for us, we had a little snafu. We sold that initial business to a bigger company. It didn't work out. And that's when Jay and Denise asked if we might be interested in having them come to join us. 22 years ago, we've come a long way. We were a mail order business. We answered the phone, took orders. Most of the orders came by mail. This digital world is Jay's world. Denise runs a beautiful gift shop. Got to walk through the gift shop to come to the garden. We have a conference room that seats 100 people. Many organizations use it, master gardeners, garden clubs, but lots of others. There's a wine festival in Becky's garden that the Chamber of Commerce puts on in September. We've got a bandstand in the garden. We bought the property next door to us, which was a music venue. We also have Flatiron Crossroads that Jay is on the board of that and encouraged us to buy that when it came available. We're in the entertainment business. Our flowers make people smile. Our music makes people dance. Becky married the only guy who has two left feet, so I have to find her dance partners. But we're blessed. We do things that help the world to smile and hopefully help people to begin to look at the world that they're a part of. The Lord created this incredible earth for us. Hopefully, once they learn to look at it through their gardens, they'll realize we can leave this better than we found it. Our motto is plant bulbs and harvest smiles.
What do you find most rewarding about gardening?
It gets me outside in fresh air. It gets me in the sunlight, which my skin produces some vitamin E. It soothes my soul. Gardening feeds the soul, I think. It's good for my health. I get good exercise in my garden. I think I fully exercise my body. I don't have to go to a gym and exercise. I feed a lot of people through my vegetable garden. I also get to share my flowers with other people. We have a flower ministry at our church where the deacons let me know if there's somebody bereaved or somebody ill. We make flower arrangements and take to them. We can each help somebody else to lead a better life and to smile with our gardens.
What are some of the biggest challenges you have faced as a gardener?
Most people expect plants to behave themselves, and they don't understand when something doesn't go right. And those are the phone calls that I get. They could be challenges, but I find that they are opportunities to help somebody to begin to look at their garden in a way they haven't looked at it yet and realize, oh, maybe this is why that hasn't done well. I never kill a plant twice in the same spot, but I do kill plants. I think everybody does. But we have to realize plants, like us humans, we have likes and dislikes, and we have happy spots, and you want to find the plant's happy spots. At first, you don't succeed, try again, but never kill a plant twice in the same spot.
Is there a particular garden style or technique that you're excited about?
I enjoy what I do. I collect plants and I put them all in bed together. Orgy gardening. The most exciting is people have moved from their backyards to their front yards. They realize that they positively impact other people's lives by making their front yards colorful and pretty. And they build a better community by including other people in their lives just by walking by on the street and seeing pretty flowers. We're seeing that more and more.
Can you share a memorable garden experience that you're proud of?
There are many that I've been blessed to be a part of. I deal with a lot of public gardens around the country, and I have helped them to do what they're doing effectively and efficiently. One of the ones that I was in at the beginning was a garden in Richmond, Virginia called Lewis Ginter Botanic Garden. I was on the first board of directors of that garden. We have come from a city park that was not being used as the heirs had asked it to be used. We've turned it into one of the top-notch gardens in the country today. That's been a wonderful experience over the years. Jay and Denise have come up with completely different new ideas. Jay has a machine. You fill the hopper with several thousand bulbs. The tractor pulls it. The plow goes under the turf. It lifts up the turf, folds it back. The hopper sends the bulbs down to a conveyor belt that spaces them on the ground. It puts the turf right back on top. He can plant up to 30,000 bulbs an hour. He's planted cemeteries, city parks, planted over 500,000 bulbs at New York Botanic Garden. That's a major, neat new innovation. Denise has a garden within Becky's garden that's a pick-your-own garden. You come into the shop and you buy a vase and you go out and you fill the vase with flowers to take home. So that's been an innovation as well.
Are there any traditions or practices passed down through your family that you're doing today?
My father was a man of nature. My father used very few chemicals. He made compost and he used weed control with mulch. Those are some of the things that came down to me, his love of the earth and giving back to the earth in order to achieve success. My mother was just a good businesswoman, just as Becky is, and Jay and Denise are much better than I. I'm dyslexic and have attention deficit. I tend to be somewhat forgetful, but also transpose numbers. Longwood Gardens, one of our biggest customers, we planned a river of bulbs with 12,000 each of five varieties of daffodils. When we got the order from our warehouse in Holland, we actually got 21,000 of each. I called Carlos, who ran our warehouse there, and said, "Carlos, you made a terrible mistake." And he said, "Brent, look at what you faxed me." That's when I really realized I didn't need to be in charge and really shouldn't be in charge. We took those extra bulbs and Becky came up with an idea that we'd give bulbs to every child in the school system to plant one bulb at their school and one bulb at their home. The next year we had a kids' daffodil show. 500 kids turned up and it's now turned into a daffodil festival here in town. First weekend in April. We have the largest daffodil show in the country here. We'll get 50,000 people come to Gloucester. There's a parade and lots of events for daffodils. Becky made lemonade out of the lemons that I created. I sold as many as I could, but we gave away a lot of bulbs. We donate bulbs in our community. Driving through, there's a daffodil trail through Gloucester now if you come here. The daffodils, they're little signs saying part of the daffodil trail, and there's on a map.
Would you give a beginning gardener a tip or advice?
Yes. To start off with, if you're a beginning gardener, feed your soil. Start with compost. Compost takes care of almost all gardening problems. And you create a good garden situation, soil, and the plants all grow really well.
Do you have any wisdom to share with a more advanced gardener?
The horticultural magazines like Horticulture, American Gardener, and Fine Gardening, these are all gardening magazines written by gardeners who show their success stories, and you can get a lot of ideas from them. I do garden walks here twice a week on Wednesdays and Saturdays in the spring, and once a month during the summer. We're near Williamsburg, Virginia. You need to call the office and sign up for it, as I limit the number of people, but I take them through Becky's garden and my garden, and they can learn a lot about gardening just by seeing what we've done right, and even show our mistakes. Join a local gardening group. Master gardeners around the country are doing wonderful things. Join the American Daffodil Society, that wonderful organization that has shows all over the country.
Besides your home garden, if you could garden anywhere in the world for a year, where would that be and why?
Gloucester's motto is land and life worth living. And having been to all except North Dakota and Hawaii and staying with gardeners and getting them to show me the best of their communities, my second choice for gardening would be New Zealand. And my third choice would probably be the Netherlands. And then fourth, fifth, and sixth, the Middle Atlantic region. Atlanta is a great gardening area, but so is the Triangle in North Carolina, a tremendously good gardening area. I like our four seasons here. I like our diversity. We're on the Chesapeake Bay. I would have a hard time moving. Everybody, please come and visit Brent and Becky's Bulbs. We're open every day except Sundays from 9 until 4. There's no charge to come. You have to walk through the gift shop to get to the garden, but the garden is open. There are trials of all the bulbs that we sell, and then 20-some themed idea garden rooms. We do seminars, planting workshops, living flower arrangement workshops, where we layer bulbs in a pot with a color theme. You take a pot of bulbs home with you. I do a number of lectures. I prefer not to get on planes as much as I have to, but I'll be in North Carolina 3 times in the next month to lecture in different master gardener groups, etc. Everybody in Atlanta, please go to Atlanta Botanic Garden. They're one of our biggest and best customers. They use a lot of our bulbs and they do it really very well. Jay and I've been there on several occasions to walk around with them. I've been there to lecture a few times. Atlanta History Center uses our bulbs. Oh, what's the cemetery?
Oakland Cemetery.
A lot of heirloom bulbs there, but they use our bulbs there. There are lots of places that do. Public gardens use a lot of our bulbs around the country.
Brent, tell us how people may connect with you.
They may go to our website, www.brentandbeckysbulbs, or they can call our business number, which is 877-661-2852. And if they have a horticultural question, our telephone agents will connect them with me.
This has been episode 153, Choosing and Growing the Right Summer Bulbs for Your Garden with Brent Heath on the Garden Question Podcast. Thank you, Brent. You're awesome. The goal is that every episode is valuable and well worth your time. Please generously share the Garden Question Podcast with your friends, relatives, and neighbors. Check out our website, thegardenquestion.com, for links, resources, and where you can listen to every episode again and again. You will not want to miss a weekly episode, so please subscribe to the Garden Question Podcast with Craig McManus on your favorite listening app. Keep on designing, building, and growing a smarter garden that works.